Okay, good afternoon. So we're going to have a bit of a chat about the technologies we see as being involved in DevOps on the Windows platform. My job, as much as anything, is as much as I love talking about the technology, I'm going to try and keep my mouth shut and stop these guys from talking too much. So we all come from different backgrounds. So I think if we just start off with some quick introductions, start with Richard.
Hi, I'm Richard Fennell. I'm the engineering director of Black Marble. We're a Microsoft Gold partner based up in Yorkshire. We're a software dev shop, fundamentally. I spend most of my time doing ALM consultancy. Well, I'd say DevOps now, because ALM's old hat and it's all DevOps now, isn't it? But I spend most of my time working with TFS, VSTS, another build, source code management, and deployment automation.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Elton. Oh, that's loud, isn't it? Should I stand up a bit? I'm a software architect. I'm a freelance and a MVP and a Docker captain. I've just come off a fairly large IoT project that was dealing with Android devices. So working for a company who put, we got about almost 2 million out there, and I was building the back-end services and also the kind of analytics. So there's a whole bunch of, it was a very small team which was using DevOps practices a couple of years ago, doing really good stuff right from the outset, and lastly, kind of moving into how can we break up the stuff we spent so much time crafting into much smaller pieces that we could run in containers.
I'm Ed Wilson. I'm the Microsoft scripting guy, and I write the Hey Scripting Guy blog, the OMS team blog, work with PowerShell and the OMS team.
And I'm Ryan Yates. I'm one of the newly minted MVPs, as they say, from April this year. I run and coordinate here in the UK the PowerShell user groups. So most people do know me from PowerShell, but I'm actually a SharePoint guy from past history. So everybody that's been beating on SharePoint today, yeah, I know your pain. I've dealt with it a lot. I'm glad to get out of it, to be honest.
Okay, cheers, guys. I should also probably introduce myself. I forget that not everybody's met before. I'm Marcus Robinson, technical evangelist at Microsoft in the UK, and I sort of travel the country talking at events about DevOps. So if we start with you, Richard, sort of what tooling do you use in your day-to-day life, and how has that changed as you've started to adopt DevOps, a DevOps-focused culture? Or it's something you've been doing for probably a lot longer.
Yeah, it's something we've been doing, but the tools have changed. As I said, we're very much a Microsoft shop, and we've bought into TFS. I've been working with TFS since it came out in 2005, and it's a very different product now. So I'm working with that and VSTS. So that's the tooling chain at the core of our system. So we're using source control, and that can be Git inside TFS, or it can be TFVC. I don't care at that point. It's source control. We're using build. Now, the new build system in TFS, the vNext one, is nice and easy to configure. The older ones were less nice, more troublesome. But we're now using the new building infrastructure that's in there. So we're using that to build our products, whether it be source code that we're compiling or taking scripts and validating them with lint products and all of those sorts of things. And for me, the talk in the sessions this morning was about how source control is really important to bring in. I've always looked at the build is the key heartbeat to a project, and I come from a software testing background. So we've been looking at every time somebody checks in, we want to build and validate that thing, whatever that means. It might mean compile, it might mean unit tests, it might mean just check it for syntax. But then we take the output of that build, and the stuff that we've been using recently is the new release stuff inside VSTS, which is the same technology effectively as the build stuff, because all it does is run a script. And that's what it boils down to. We need an engine that is capable of running a script that's appropriate of where to what we want to build or deploy. So for us, that's TFS build, so it's either running PowerShell or Node if we're in a cross-platform environment. Again, it doesn't care.
Yeah, and sort of early on today, Michael introduced the concept of source control, which I know a lot of legacy operations guys is new, whereas the likes of Richard have been using it for years. I know, Ryan, you feel quite passionately around that.
Yeah, so from my perspective, if you are an ops guy and you haven't started using source control, go and speak with your devs if they're using source control. I say that because I've worked with teams with devs who didn't know what source control was. And that scared me enough to leave that team. But it's one of the few fundamental things that is going to change the way that we are working. If you don't work in source control now, it's something that you need to pick up very quickly. Stephen Morawski said, if you're not using source control, use Git. There's a good reason for that, in my view, and that's because a lot of the stuff that you're seeing now in the open source world is hosted on GitHub, which uses Git as the underlying source control platform. But that doesn't mean you need to do that internally. You can use, as Richard said, you can use TFS, and it's source control. I don't use TFS, so I can't comment on that.
It makes no difference. It's source control's the key. It doesn't matter which one you're using.
You guys are absolutely right. You need to have a master source of truth, which is where the source control comes in. Everything that we're doing is scripting, so it's all text files. So you get your nice, easy compare. You can see exactly who's changed what and when. But actually, that's just the kind of it's just the foundation. And for me, the more important part of the tool chain is the pipeline that says, I'm going to take this from the master, and I'm going to push it out to whatever environment it is we're pushing. I'm kind of a little bit more on the cross-platform side, so we tend to use things like Jenkins. But again, we're just using that as the coordinator, and we're plugging in scripts, we're plugging in PowerShell, and whatever's appropriate. So if we're doing a deployment to Azure, then we'll have a whole bunch of PowerShell scripts. We'll use Jenkins to set up the right ones. It's the right tool for the job. But actually, that pipeline that says, okay, we know what we want now, let's push it out and test it. That's the key thing, I think.
One of the things that you probably need to think about a little bit when it comes to like source control, I mean, it's not just for the dev, test, production release or something. It can also make things a lot nicer for you. I mean, so I'm sure that everyone in this room has had the experience of writing a piece of code, that was perfectly fine, perfectly working, good code, and then you needed to add some additional functionality to it, and then all of a sudden, dude, it's messed up completely. this was like really, 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 really brought home to me. I was writing my my PowerShell resource guidebook. This is like a number of years ago. It was like on PowerShell 1, and we were in Regensburg, Germany, and we were taking the train to Hamburg. That's a 5-hour trip. Shortly after we left the train station in Regensburg, I inadvertently introduced an error into this 400-and-some-line long script. I didn't find the error until we were pulling into Hamburg. I mean, that is 5 hours of my life that was like completely wasted looking for like the stupidest little thing. So if I had been using source control, and it doesn't have to be anything big, expensive, or fancy. I mean, there are lots and lots and lots of source control stuff out there. And some of them are like even ridiculously easy to use. And so if I'd been using even the most rudimentary thing, I would have easily just said, okay, well, this version didn't work. Let me get rid, discard it, and go back to my last known good working script. So this is something that's kind of like flossing your teeth. I mean, you need to do it. Everybody knows you need to do it. It's just you need to get into the habit.
Hopefully we all get the message. If you're not doing it, do it. It's a safety net.
There was only one thing I was going to point on to that. So from my background, SharePoint is all about the version of your documents that you've got controlled. That's where my version control history came in. And I started off using SharePoint hosted on-premises in my own house with my scripts, and then went, this doesn't work at all, because I had some stuff that was, this worked Friday lunchtime, this worked Wednesday, and it was just like, no, okay, I need to look at some real source control. So that was something that don't use SharePoint for that.
Yeah. So one thing that hit me when I started getting involved in the world of DevOps is the number of different tools we have to choose from. How do you decide which tool is right for the job? What important considerations do you have?
Hey, I've got the mic. That's handy. a lot of it is your background, your experience, your own prejudices. So I've worked in cross-platform teams who wouldn't even dream of going anywhere near TFS, or they didn't. I've worked with guys who were brought in to manage part of our cloud deployment, and it was in Azure, and they didn't want to learn PowerShell. Now, so Azure's got a whole bunch of stuff there. There's the cross-platform CLI. There's a whole bunch of other things you can use, but actually they tend to lag a little bit. PowerShell's usually the first guy up there. So if you don't don't want to learn that tool, you're not necessarily going to have the best experience. There's a huge range of stuff out there. So in terms of what tools do I use, I think you're better off taking a step back and saying, what problems have I got? What do I want to get out of this stuff, and then start looking around.
Anybody else want to add?
Just a short one. It doesn't matter what application, what language you're using. It could be PowerShell, it could be Ruby, it could be Python. Just use what's right for what you need to do. I've had to learn Ruby to start working with Chef a little bit, but you don't need to learn it in and out. It's just get started down that path. But don't be scared to go and learn something new, because if you're scared to do that, you're going to be sat with SharePoint 2010 still, or 2003 still. You know, we're going to be at that point with other applications as well. And that's the thing that I think going forward is people just need to be aware of learning something that's new to them.
Yeah, cool. Go ahead. The
easiest tool that does the job. That's what I'm going to use.
Yeah, I think the key thing is, you know, as long as your organization gets out of it what it needs, you know, it's the quickest route to get what you want. One thing that also hits me with the number of tools is we have all these choices. Do we think there'll be some consolidation of tooling down the road? Or do you think, because there's so many tools, especially with the, developed by the communities, we're getting more and more tools appear. Is that a good thing that we've got so many choices?
I think it's a good thing, but it's like in all cases, if we have a sort of a monolithic infrastructure with only one thing, we don't get that cross-fertilization and the new ideas coming through. So the old when there's just one browser and there's just IE, look what happened. And how much better things have got. So we've got Chrome and a bit of competition. So you're going to see that in there. But what we're seeing around a lot of the tools is good community buy-in to the tool chains as they stand, and extensions, as have been shown with the PowerShell stuff in the sessions this morning. An awful lot of the tooling now has come out of the community. And in the space I work in the most with VSTS, there's a lot of extensions there being built by the community as well to fill in the gaps. So it's look for the community, I would say, and that probably talks back to the previous question. Look for the thing that's got the community, that's got the blog posts and the discussions where you can get your answers on Stack Overflow and wherever.
So building on from that, if there was one community-driven bit of tooling, you know, you could recommend to the people here today, what would that be? Do you want to start with you, Ryan? Or?
I don't know which one I could pick, because there's a lot of them in the PowerShell world that I would say, you know, straight away that you need to look at. Stuff like Script Analyzer, although that comes actually from the PowerShell team themselves, that's actually got a lot of stuff coming from the community. And then you've got Pesta, which was actually built from the community and then shipped with Windows 10. There's so much coming from the community. It depends, again, what it is you need to do, and then go and find what it is that will do that.
We're all desperately hunting for ideas. To be honest, if you haven't looked at it already, it's got to be Pesta.
So to step away from the PowerShell bit, I would definitely say you need to be looking at Docker. The word Docker hasn't been used nearly enough today. And what's interesting about Docker is that, so there's a whole ecosystem around there. There's the runtime that runs the containers. But actually, there are other parts of the tools which are wholly community driven. So you can use there's a tool called Docker Machine, which you can use to create a VM and install Docker on it in one go. And there's a driver plugin framework, so you can create that VM on Hyper-V, VMware, VirtualBox, Azure, AWS, and all those driver bits are all community-driven. You know, there are certain technologies that really excite people, and that's where the community focuses a huge amount of effort. And I think it's wise to be aware of what people are doing.
Cool. So we got into the topic of containers there. You know, and again, this is a session about tooling. So we see a lot of configuration management technologies out there today. Do you think with the rise of containers, that we'll see less of a reliance on configuration management technologies moving forward? Or is configuration management still going to be required to the level it is today?
I think you'll just move the problem. You've got to manage the configuration you're going to burn into your container for your immutable container. So you effectively just move that question back a section. So in the case of Docker, we're effectively managing text files fundamentally. So we'll need something to manage the contents of those text files. So TeamCity or Jenkins or whatever we're using for our automation will need to be validating and pushing those into the container building. So we won't need them. We'll be worrying less about configuring our servers because they're just Docker hosts or they're So it just moves the problem.
Yeah, I think on that, it's moving the problem back to the devs, not to the ops guys. So at the moment, configuration management is really for the ops guys. But I think in the future, it's going to be about the devs actually building the containers using configuration management to then pass that to ops guys to then implement. And at that point, then ops guys don't have that much that they need to do, really.
But the problem there is you've got to teach devs how infrastructure works.
It goes back to the other way. You've got to teach the ops guys how dev works. So it's a two-way street.
But the one thing about that actually, which in the case of containers, is actually some of the infrastructure goes away. So you're working in a world of a virtual network where you define what your containers, what images they're going to run from, and then you just give them a name, and then actually you don't really care about things like IP addresses and what host they're running on, because each container knows about itself by its name in a virtual network. So you can kind of abstract away some of that infrastructure concern.
Cheers. So we haven't really talked that much about cloud today. I think there's an underlying theme. Okay, but when we're working with DevOps practices, do we see we're using the same tooling whether we're deploying to cloud environments compared to on-prem environments, and how do we see that in the future, moving forward?
I'll pass on to Richard in a second. So I think one of the most important things about cloud in terms of DevOps uptake is that it's a really easy way to get started with demonstrating to people how quickly you can do stuff. So if you can say to someone, we're thinking about doing this and doing this and doing this, and actually we need to go and buy a dozen servers and install Azure Stack, and we'll come back in a month's time, they're not going to be interested. But if you say, hang about, look, here we are, we're gonna use our Azure trial, here's our VM, we've deployed some stuff on it, 10 minutes later, we're ready to go. That, to people who aren't really up to what the speed benefits are that you can get, when they see that, then they start to realize that this is something that actually is fundamentally going to change how we build software. And from then on, you can kind of move back.
I think at the moment, what we're finding is we're still seeing a separation between the infrastructure and the deploying of your app, the bit that your devs have written. So we're doing a lot of work at the moment with Azure Resource Management, ARM templates, which are levering DSC underneath. And we're looking at those to provision out our infrastructure, our virtual networks. But we're still using, not MSIs, but we are still using technologies to deploy the apps onto that infrastructure. So tools like Redgate's tools for databases, or SQL Server database tools, DAC packs, for getting the DB schema out. And then I really like MS Deploy as a way of deploying websites, and that's nicely extensible as well. So we're still seeing that sort of split area. So a common deployment pipeline for us is run an ARM template that spins up some complex network, then deploy with exactly the same technologies as we'd use on-prem, i.e. push a DAC pack there, run an MS Deploy over there, and it doesn't really matter. Now, the dream is I can use my ARM templates for my on-prem, and I don't care where I'm going, but I need Azure Stack for that, which is obviously in RC at the moment, but not quite out in production.
Do people see Azure Stack as a game changer, or would you see it just as a temporary solution for people that aren't ready to move to the public cloud?
I think it's a 50-50. There's going to be some companies that will go, yes, we want to just take it right here, right now, and are actually wanting to put Azure Stack in right now as it is. But then there'll be other companies that will go, right, well, actually, we're not interested in having any on-prem infrastructure. So it will be business dependent.
One interesting one I've seen is that quite a few companies I deal with, you always talk with the agility of the cloud is I only pay for what I'm going to use, which is great for a startup where you don't know how big your load is. But a lot of companies I'm working with, they have a fixed load that they sort of know they're going to have, but they might have bursts because they're doing testing, or they want to try something new, or there's a big trade show coming, all of those sorts of things. So they're willing to invest in an on-prem box that carries the base load, and then they occasionally burst out to the cloud, so a hybrid cloud model. And in that, Azure Stack is very appealing because exactly the same pipeline works, and all they do is flick a flag somewhere that says, I'll deploy that one in the cloud, deploy that one here. So that's a model I'm seeing for some companies. Maybe not a startup-y thing, but I've seen it more in enterprises.
Yeah, I think the value of that hybrid model is that exactly what you say, you've got the same API. You don't care whether you're running it on a machine in the cellar or up in Dublin or London, hopefully soon for Azure. But the tool and the platform don't necessarily solve the problems. So I'm working with a financial client who are trialing Azure Stack at the moment. They really like it. They love the idea that teams can provision their own stuff. You want to provision a VM, you have to email someone and they take a week to deliver it for you. So the tool itself isn't the thing. The tool needs to work with the processes and the people.
I've had enough of me asking questions. Has any of the audience got some questions you'd like to ask our panel? Anybody?
If we are talking about tooling, we've got lots of sponsors here today which have these fantastic tools from Octopus, Chocolaty, Team, all the kinds of things I've been speaking about today. Microsoft's own tool for infrastructure management seems to have languished in the dark ages. I'm talking System Center, SECM, and SCOM. In terms of application development, wow, they are fancy things. But in terms of infrastructure, System Center, really? What are the options? Stump the panel, jeepers.
I'm not sure that I would say that like System Center's languished. I mean, we've just got 2016 that's command is pretty cool stuff. And I know we've got lots and lots of customers that are using System Center. What we've done, from the team that I'm on, the operations management suite team, we're looking at trying to initially, we were looking at trying to bring the same management capabilities that you have from System Center into a cloud type or to a hybrid environment. And then we kind of took it, and a lot of stuff actually kind of went further than that. So that was like kind of our initial charter, and we've gone much beyond that in several other areas. And so now what we're seeing is that a lot of customers that have System Center are also buying OMS to add on top of it, so that we have a better together type of story, so that we get a lot of, with OMS, which, as I was mentioning earlier, we're doing continuous release. So when you pair up, with System Center and OMS together, then you've got that stable, System Center, but then you've also got, OMS, that's bringing in new capabilities, constantly, so that you can keep up with the dynamically changing environment, that we see. What's going to happen beyond that? Dude, I don't know. And if I did, I couldn't tell you.
I was going to say, as time moves on, it'll be interesting, if people start adopting Azure Stack, what role does the System Center suite, play in that?
That was the comment I was thinking, that we're starting to see that's the future. I think some of my customers are looking towards that. Well, can I do this with Azure Stack and link it to the way we're handling things in Azure? System Center has its place, but it's not necessarily the place this community and the sort of subjects we're talking about today. I don't feel it's focused particularly there. And I've certainly had customers who've had ideas to do the type of things we've been seeing today and thought about it with the System Center and then backed off and just gone, it's just too hard. It's not going to work. But those same projects are being kicked off now with Azure Stack and ARM. I've found ARM has been the big enabler for kickstarting this.
So the only thing I'd say on System Center is that they're actually adopting a better release pipeline for themselves. So there's a lot more coming out in the on-premise System Center in comparison to the last couple of releases. So it's something to look for and look at, but I'm not a System Center guy, so I can't say anything further than what I've seen out there in the public.
I was a System Center guy. Yeah. Any more questions? What do you want to ask? So out of WinOps sort of today so far, what is the sort of most interesting discussion that you've had today around how you carry out DevOps practices within your organization?
So for me, the Mike Green's session about DevOps was the best discussion of the topic that I've heard. So I've seen lots of people go off on bizarre tangents. The idea of DevOps is that we're going to teach our ops people to code, and or we're going to get rid of all our ops people. And actually, there's fundamental misunderstanding out there, which is fairly widespread. And I think I think Mike's session was a really clear cut understanding of what it's about, what it does for you, and how you approach it. So I think that was a great session.
Yeah, and also, like I said, I liked Mike's session, particularly when he was talking, mentioning, that if you're looking for a new skill that you want to learn, Pester's it. Yeah, and I thought that was a really nice, very clear discussion. I thought it was great. I tweeted his comment where he said, "Your peers do not read your reports as closely as they read Facebook." I think that's the best comment from the whole conference so far.
Actually, I was just sitting in the session just before this one in here, Gal's session, and it was interesting to see. We've been talking about the whole journey, and Mike was talking about the moving through and source code and build and test and all of those, and it's all good stuff. But it was interesting to see Gal's position there, talking about the pets and cattle, which we've all talked about, but moving it onto chickens. And it's, I think it then that whole point about moving to containers. So we used to handcraft things. Then we try and automate things, as we've been discussing before, but now we're starting to talk about containerization, smaller units, far easier to replace. And I think the takeaway for me there is, some of us might be running to catch up, but even the ones at the front have got a long way to go. This is a long story. This is a long game, and maybe it's our IT industry looping round again, and you'll always find some mainframe person from the 70s coming going, "We were doing this in 1972. In APL, I think it's showing us that we've all got stuff we can move through and carry on learning.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that for me from just WinOps as a conference is that there's that much change happening within all of the technology spaces. Don't try and keep up with everything. Keep up with what's close to you, but keep an eye on stuff that's happening outside of what is your core, because that's where you can have the little bits of fun. Go and do something that you wouldn't normally do at the weekend. Just because that way you get the opportunity to say, right, for example, maybe you've built something using a Raspberry Pi. That wouldn't be something you'd do in work every day, unless, of course, you're...
Anybody else? That's, moving on from there. I've had a question ready, and I forgot what I was going to ask. We've talked a lot about PowerShell, as Ryan was saying, learn different technologies. So we talked about learning PowerShell, and I think in the Windows world it's generally accepted without good PowerShell knowledge you're going to struggle. Okay. What if there's one tool or technology other than PowerShell that you recommend people look into, to learn, to be ready for the future, what do you think it would be?
I'm going to go out on a limb and I'd say JavaScript, and I hate it. And that's because it's used everywhere now. We didn't used to have everything getting loaded on client-side. It was all server-side loading. Now everything's moving to the point where we're using client-side technologies like JavaScript and Node.js and all of these different JavaScript frameworks. I'm pretty certain there's one every couple of hours that comes out that's new. It's just...
It's any noun with JS after it.
Yeah. There is a Twitter account that I found yesterday that was just... It was a bot. That all it does is picks a random word out of the dictionary, puts .js, and then puts a random sort of meaning to what that JS library would be.
OMS. seriously, OMS is going to be huge. So, for instance, I was telling somebody, that it's really cool because, PowerShell's been around 10 years. And, now when you ask, hey, how many of you have heard PowerShell? How many have been using PowerShell? Everybody raises their hand. It wasn't that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when you'd be lucky to get 10, 20% of the people raising their hand and saying they were using PowerShell. So what happened is we had this kind of slow build, and then all of a sudden, just boom, it took off, because it not generally availability, of course, it was general acceptability. Yeah, and that always occurs several years after products occurred. What we're going to see with OMS, though, is we have a huge development space behind it, and it is crucial, you know, to, I don't know if you noticed, Microsoft's kind of turned around here in the last year or so. You know, it is crucial to our new further direction. You know, so as if we're going to be in this world, you know, then, you know, OMS is absolutely going to be the key, and that's what I've been recommending people learn.
So you thought you were going to limp. I'm going to say Linux, because because this is predominantly a Windows conference. So the interesting thing about the Linux world is it's always been a different world. It's always been not just like a little bit over there, but way over there. But they've always had some really cool stuff that has never really been available to us Windows guys. So like Git started in Linux, and tools like Hadoop that have become, you know, really mainstream. But what's interesting about the whole containerization thing is it's becoming a lot easier to incorporate those tools into our own stack. And with 2016, we can mix and match, and that's going to be really interesting. You don't have to, exactly as Ryan said, you don't have to become a Linux guru, but actually getting as far as being able to understand a bit of apt-get and a bit of, you know, being able to read a Docker file and understand what's going on. Some of those tools that have always been slightly envious of, like if you want a really good software load balancer in Windows, well, in Linux, they've got HAProxy, they've got Nginx. They're really easy to use. They're fantastic bits of kit. Some of those don't work so well on Windows. But actually, with the fact that, you know, there's a whole lot more cross-pollination, I think being cross-platform will open a lot of doors and change the way you think about how you work with Windows, too. So, yeah, I'm going to say Linux. And I'll make sure I'm not going to get pushed off this.
So would I. So obviously, what the announcement we're waiting for is the PowerShell on Linux with .NET Core. So I don't know if you've got anything to say, Jeffrey. No. So
we've heard that answer before.
So while we're waiting for that announcement, I'd go with the JavaScript or probably Node if you run a lot of server-side stuff. But the one I'd recommend having a look at there is have a look at Visual Studio Code. It works cross-platform, and have a look at writing your JavaScript or your Node using TypeScript, because you get some type checking. You can run it easily through a parser. It reduces those stupid, I've missed a semicolon, and how many brackets do I really need type errors. So I'd say, and that will work happily on Linux as well.
And I just add to that, if you're an infrastructure guy and you haven't looked at Visual Studio as a way to create infrastructure using things like ARM templates, you need to look at it, you know, if you're going to be in the Windows, well, Azure world, I guess.
Sorry. Yeah, I'd just say Vagrant is definitely a tool worth looking at. And given that we're going to have Bash on Windows 10, does that negate PowerShell?
I'm not going to say it negates it. It adds to the toolkit. So if you need to use Bash, use Bash. But if you need to use PowerShell, use PowerShell. It's use the right tool for the right job. Sometimes you'll find Bash is the one to use. Sometimes you'll find PowerShell is the one to use. There's no right or wrong answer, I don't think.
I think one point at the moment with Bash on Windows is it's really aimed more at devs who want to do a bit of Ruby dev or something like that, where you've got relatively thin Ruby gem wrappers around Linux calls. So it enables that workflow. There's my understanding, and I haven't had a deep play, for the ops side, there's a lot of stuff you can't do with Bash at the moment.
Yeah, it's one of those confusing stories. I think as soon as it's available and you kick the tires, you'll see what it is and it'll be unambiguous. It's a great offering, but to be clear, its value is that it's completely unintegrated into Windows, right? It's completely unintegrated. So what's that mean? That means in the past, we tried this, right? In the past, we had services for Unix. We tried to integrate Unix and Linux together, but it just didn't work, right? Awk didn't work against the registry. Sed didn't work against WMI, you know, et cetera. And as much as we tried to solve those things, whenever we tried to integrate the two environments, it just sort of chalk and cheese didn't work. The great value of the environment is that it is unintegrated, which is to say you run Bash and you are in a Bash bubble. Now, in that bubble, you can write open source software. That's its focus. Its focus is the developer community that want to use their Windows 10 laptops and desktops and all these amazing new devices that Windows 10 runs on, but they want to do open source development against their Linux boxes. The Bash environment gives them a nice little
open source bubble where they're able to do that. They bring in their native tools. They're able to develop their code, push it to a Linux server. Happy days, works really well. But again, there's no integration, right? You're not going to be able to say, you know, there's very little integration. But that's a good thing. In fact, we had one of the PowerShell developers who wrote a blog and sent it out for reviews. Like, oh, with Bash Shell, you can say Bash and run some command and then pipe it to PowerShell. We said, no, don't talk about that. That's just going to lead people down the wrong path. You don't want them to think about it being an integrated environment. That's just going to lead to the trail of tears of disappointment because it just doesn't work.
Thank you. I think on that note, unless anybody else has any questions, it's time for a coffee break. So thanks very much.